Okay, Be'ezer Hashem, tonight I wanted to share with you an idea that I've discussed in the past, although I think these walls haven't heard it, the walls of this classroom haven't heard it, the walls of the Beis Medrash, if you listen carefully, the walls testify to this idea. The Ramban in his Egeres says something beautiful and at the same time cryptic. Be carefully to speak softly to a person at all time. And with this you're going to be able to be saved from anger. Question being, what does the Ramban mean? If you speak softly, you'll be saved from anger. Now that is a very, very dramatic formulation. The Ramban, I think, means pshuto kemashmo. The Ramban writes something, when he's writing in Bava Basra or in Ksubas, when the Ramban says something, then he means it. All of a sudden, now, it's poetry? I don't think so. I think the Ramban is telling us that the most awful of the midas, that Chazal say, kol ha-koyez kilu oyved avoydezar, kol ha-koyez kol minei gehenem sholten boy, hell dominates such a person, that Chazal at the same time talk about the awfulness of Kas, say that the solution and the way in which to prevent is simply to speak softly. So of course the question becomes, how? What and why? What is it about speaking softly that changes a person? And the idea that I want to develop, Be'ezer Hashem, tonight is an idea that's particularly relevant to the beginning of this month. Particularly second-year boys, predominantly tonight we have the second-year boys here, second-year boys who are bachurim, as well as second-year guys in the kolah. I want to pull out a geshmak amar makom. Of course, a geshmak amar makom is not a Ramban and a Gemara. Geshmak amar makom is a Wall Street Journal article from August 17th. It's a fascinating, fascinating article written by a professor of philosophy at Calvin College. His name is James Smith. And he writes an article, now you'll see in a moment, that's not only about education, his agenda has a political agenda to it, which I'm not going to be ma'arich on about the political agenda, but I think a very, very important mussar for us. He writes to second year guys. He's a professor in college, but they're not called Shana Bet. They're called sophomores. Sounds familiar? Some of your friends have that name now. Dear college sophomore, at this time last year, you were an excited freshman. Moving into the residence hall brought both a thrill of newfound independence, but you soon settled in. You couldn't get enough of the new worlds. This is their awesome world. The worlds that your instructors introduced you to, Homer's Greece, Augustine's Rome. And trust me, we noticed. I noticed you guys last year during 10-minute Musar, the excitement of the Shana Aleph guy for the first time that you hear Sichas Musar. It's something special. You are the student that teachers dream about and the one we talk about in the faculty dining room. The one who gets it. When you see Talmidim grow, it gives Rabbeim a tremendous, tremendous ilah. But, and here's the mussar to the college sophomore. I couldn't help but notice a change in you already last spring. And now the classes are starting up again, I see a familiar shift in your stance to the world. Your curiosity has hardened into misplaced confidence. Your desire to learn has turned into a penchant to pronounce as if wisdom were a race to being the quickest debunker. Now, the omic of this article is not talking only about education, it's a complaint that the excitement of college campuses is about the liberal world debunking anything that's important. That's not my agenda, because I'm not into solving the issues on American campus. However, the issue over here that's really, really, really striking is this idea that when you come second year, you become a sophomore, a college sophomore, the professor observes has these problems that already they're know-it-alls. I could tell you as a Shachar and Bet Rebbe, I'm watching guys coming back, both second year in yeshiva and second year to a kollel, all of a sudden they know everything. They're experts, they're mumchim. The Ramban says that the yisod yisodos of a person's avoda is a realization that he still has so much to learn from everybody. You know, the first question I ever got when I came to the yeshiva that I work in, day out, in Netiv Aryeh, the first question that I got from a Shana Bet guy, the first question I ever got in my career, when I came to Eretz Yisrael, I arrived in yeshiva, I hadn't even walked into the door. This fellow says hello to me, he didn't know who I was, and he had heard my name, that I was coming to be Shana Bet student. The first question I ever got, is he said to me, Rabbi, what's your style? That, I'm not making this up, that's exactly the first question I ever got. What's your style? Already the second year guy is trying to decide, is this rabbi's style my style, or is it not my style? Says the Ramban, a person who begins to decide, this is my style, this is not, the world is going to revolve around my style. I'm not sure if I'm interested in listening to you. Ramban says the key in being an Oved Hashem, the key to fight kas is that the world doesn't revolve around you. And yes, that's the pshat. A person who speaks softly is a person who doesn't try to dominate in his worldview, and ultimately, Ezel Chacham Aloy Min Mikol Adam. The Netziv has an amazing story. The Netziv, I mentioned this also in the past, met a maskil. The maskil was close to the Netziv because both of them loved digduk. It's known that in the yeshivas they don't emphasize digduk very much. But the Netziv said to the developed a friendship, and the maskil would send to the Netziv his questions about digduk. And then the Netziv responded to all the maskil's questions. The maskil was bothered. At the end of the day, he said to the Netziv, I don't understand. You and I, the maskil says to him, are equal. We're on the same plane in the level of digduk. You're equal. He felt that Netziv wasn't stronger than him. He says, but I don't understand. I've devoted my entire life to Jewish grammar, and you have devoted your life to be a Talmud scholar. How could it possibly be that we're at the same place? We're both just as smart. By the way, legend has it that Netziv wasn't a genius. And Netziv gave him a beautiful mashal. And the Netziv said, he based on a pasuk in Eishes Chayil, but for 10-minute mussar it goes too long. The Netziv said as follows. The Netziv said, you have two people who come into the store. One person says to the storekeeper, I'd like to have this garment bag. It's a nice garment bag. The storekeeper gives it to him for free. Another fellow sees it. The fellow just asks for the garment bag. And he says to the store owner, can I have an garment bag? And the storekeeper says to him, silly. The first guy just walked out of the store. He bought a suit and he forgot to take the garment bag. The garment bag comes for free. You who want just the garment bag, you who want this style, then you're going to have to pay full price. The moment there's a person who's already shofet, who judges somebody else, so okay, he's going to get the style he wants, it's going to take time, and he's going to have to pay a very, very heavy price. But the person who comes in without this gaiva that he already knows what he wants, he already knows who he wants to learn from, he already passeled half of the rabbeim because they're not his ashkafa, or they don't read the Gemara the way they would like, so in such a case, a person might eventually find what he wants, but it's going to be at a tremendous price. I'm not to speak. It touched me that Michael is here, and I think he's speaking later to the second-year guys. And I want you to say, I know you're going to deliver to the guys a message much more precisely than me. Michael this summer was in Gaza. When a person is there, based on what we just schmoozed about a little bit tonight, a person realizes that they don't have all the answers. That the solutions to life are not something that are easy and are something that one could come to naturally. How is it that he was in a house and it was a mistake, and it's so easy to make the mistakes. The challenges that our soldiers were under is mind-boggling. And in the house that he was in, Baruch Hashem, the house that he was in, there was an order to fire mistakenly at that house. And normally, when they first fire at the room to blow up an area for the doorway. And this time they decided not to. When a person goes through that experience, they realize that there's a higher power that's at play, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to realize that you don't have all of the answers. And when we hear those stories, and this is just one of the many, when we hear those stories, we realize that a sense of cockiness that's so common for young men, particularly young men who've begun to go through a system and think that they know it all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, wait a second, let me remind you, listen to these people who know what not having the answers is all about. And that, I think, is a very, very important yisod. To realize that we don't have all the terutzim and we're not the generals in the army. What would happen if, God forbid, every single soldier would decide on his own? You know, it seems to me, it makes more sense, based on the concordance, the way I see it, it's supposed to go that way. Can you imagine what awful things happen the moment any type of chain of command is lost? So why is it that when it comes to a soldier, everybody understands that when it comes to soldiers, there's a chain of command. But when it comes to B'nai Torah, there's no understanding that there's any chain of command. I'm not talking about blind obedience. I'm talking about the idea that if you people who know you say that you could learn something from this person, that you could learn something from this Rebbe, that you, as one of the soldiers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's army, and I'm speaking about both now, I'm thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's physical army here in Eretz Yisrael Tzal, and I'm talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's army of B'nai Torah. There's a certain amount of anava that has to go into it, being able to listen. So this is the message of tonight. Second year, guys, in Gruss, all of a sudden also, you know the system, you work the system. What an avla when a second year guy goes over to somebody and he says, you know, for this bechina, you don't really have to know that. There's an awful story with Ramesha Feinstein, an awful, awful, awful story. I say it over b'pachad. They say that there was a fellow who was studying Avelus in Ramosha Feinstein's Kol Tucha Rusas, and Ramosha said to them, why is it that you're so far ahead? He said to Ramosha, we skip the simanim that aren't halacha lemaisa, that aren't relevant. You know what simon they skipped? Simanim they skipped were the halachas of, God forbid, a chasana or kala loses a parent by the chasana. Legend has it that both of those chavrusas had a chasana where one of the parents of the chasana and kala passed away. I don't know if the legend is true. It's almost too painful to even repeat. But this idea of that all of a sudden a person has a cockiness, I have to know this and I don't have to know this. I learn this style and I don't learn this style. I listen to this person and I don't listen to that person. Contrast that mindset to what I heard from my wife's grandmother, who's Bli Ayin Hara, 89 years old, and she's just retiring as a professor of math. Come back to the math part. Professor of math in Brooklyn College. And she turned to my wife and she said, Aliza, I haven't figured out yet what I'm going to do when I grow up. You know what happens to these people who have already made up their minds in life, what's important, what not? There's a woman who has three masters in three different fields, has a beautiful, beautiful family, Bli Ayin Hara, with many, many different types of grandchildren, all feeling loved from their grandmother. How does such a thing come about? Because there's a person who appreciates HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world is so beautiful, and then you could be so young at age 89 where you could say, okay, I'm not sure what I'm going to do when I grow up. But the moment a person becomes mitzumtzum, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, fine, I'll give you a life mitzumtzum. You'll know dig duk, but that's the only thing that you're going to have. That's what you're interested in. Says the Ramban, the moment in which you're already beginning to speak softly and you're beginning to listen to what's going on around you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has these beautiful, beautiful messages that He's going to send you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the siyata d'shmaya that we should always remain young. It's an awesome, awesome midah. And that ability comes from the ability to be broad and open and to be able to see ledaber kol dvarecha benachas. Benachas doesn't only mean physically softly. Ledaber kol dvarecha benachas is the ability to be able to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending me a message from everywhere. The moment a person is open that the world no longer revolves around him, no longer revolves around his prejudgments, is a moment in which a person really can internalize the messages of Ben Torah. And Be'ezer Hashem, there will be zocha to truly be Chayole HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And during this Zman, which were mamish soldiers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Zman of Elul, Be'ezer Hashem will be zocha to a Yom Hadin, which is a Yom that transforms us into people who represent everything that the word Nachas represents. A good Shabbos.